Hello, friends, and welcome back to the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. During the first hour, I was interviewing a wonderful gentleman named Professor Jerry Pollack, who I consider one of the world's most famous and interesting water scientists. He's on the line now. We'll go back to Jerry in just a few minutes. He's graciously agreed to stay on for a few more minutes. And I just wanted to tell everyone that I have a spiritual mentoring program where I teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides. And if you'd like to get in touch with your guides and angels, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me at 509-750-9793. Also, my next Galactic Wisdom Conference, my fifth annual conference, will be held in Olympia, Washington, from April 12th to the 16th, 2019. And if you register before the end of the year, the cost is only $55 for the entire conference. After that, it'll go up to $125. In addition, a week from today, from September 6th to the 12th, I'll be taking a group of people down to Mount Shasta, where we'll see Telos in the Hollow Earth, and as well as see Sasquatch and all kinds of UFOs flying around. I've been sponsoring trips to Mount Shasta and the Hollow Earth for several years, and it's just an incredible experience. We talked a little bit about that during the last hour. If you'd like to go on the trip or need more details, there are a few spots still there. Please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me on my cell at 509-750-9793. I know that Professor Pollack is waiting, but I'd like to bring on Charlie from Crystal Spirit. Eric, if we could. You have his number there. Real brief to talk about his psychic fair. I'll be giving readings there this weekend, and then we'll go back to Professor Pollack. Yeah, we'll go back to Professor Pollack. And we also have Michiko Hayashi on the line from Tokyo. Michiko, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh,
hi,
good.
Dad.
Hi. So thank you so much for getting up so early. What time is it there? Is it about what?
It's 7 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, my
Saturday
goodness.
Morning.
Oh, you got up so early. So early.
It's all right.
So
well, thank
early.
You so much for having me there.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. And of course, Michiko, you know Professor Pollack. And Jerry, you know Michiko as well.
We're
of
old
course.
Friends. Good friends. Yes.
Oh, Jerry, hello. It's so
yeah,
good to talk
good to
you.
Yeah, good to hear your voice. And looking forward to seeing you at the water conference.
Yes, this water conference is just amazing. And I'm so excited I can be there. And I would like everyone around the world to come to this conference, because this is something very new, something very important for all people to learn about all the science of water. This is so important for everyone, for the earth,
Michiko,
for the science world.
Michiko,
yes.
Didn't Dr. Emoto say, and forgive me if I paraphrase this, that he said God is water or water is God, something like that?
Well, yeah, he said water is God.
Okay.
But I don't want to get into that. You know, it's I do want to talk about water.
Okay.
What water can do for people, for the world.
Okay. All right. Well, I couldn't help but ask that, you know.
Well, thank you. Yes.
Yeah, I'm a little out of this world.
He did say water is, yeah. He did say water is God.
Wonderful. 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 Well,
and so many religions, if you look at the fundamental text, like the Bible or Quran and such, you see water mentioned all the time as the center of life.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in a trip to Saudi Arabia some years ago, some guy came running to show me a copy of the Quran, and he had dog-eared so many pages. He opens it up and says, "Here, look, see, water, water, water. It's all over the Quran." And
it does.
So central to all of Islam, and so central to all religions.
That's amazing.
Ones I heard of.
It's really interesting, because yesterday I just received an email from a mother who lives in Cebu Island in Philippines, and she wrote to me and said that her grandmother used to, whenever she got sick when she was small, her grandma would ask someone, shaman or someone, and then this shaman would bring a jar of water and coming, doing some, talking to this jar of water and bring that water to this woman. And she didn't know what she this shaman did, but she was told to drink it. And whenever she drank it, she got well. And so she said now that she has her children, and she just remembered it, and she read Dr. Emoto's message from water many years ago, and now she says, well, this is really important because she has her sons, and she wants to just study one more time, and she wants to have the access to this book. And you know, this reminds me that so many people around the world many, many years ago used to heal people with water also.
I want to just hold that thought for a minute, Michiko, and Jerry,
okay.
If you could hold on for a second. Charlie, from my good friend Charlie from the Crystal, beautiful, wonderful place, McCrystal Spirit in Tacoma. He's located on 38, just off of Cedar near the Tacoma Mall. Charlie, I just want to bring you on just for a minute, talk about your wonderful fair this weekend, and I'll be there. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, Deb, thanks for having me on. We have our Intuitive and Healing Arts Fair every month, the first full weekend of the month. We're going to have about 10 or 12 readers on Saturday and about half that on Sunday. So we look forward to having you guys come down and check out some of our new crystals, and a lot of fun.
Wonderful, Charlie. I'll be there too. And Charlie, thank you so much for having your wonderful place there. I always love your energy. It's like an uplifting, every time I walk into your store, it's like an uplifting blast of spiritual energy. So
excellent. Let's create some fun this weekend, Ted.
Yeah, great, Charlie. Well, I'll see you tomorrow. And if you're in the area, please stop by and at least say hi. Okay, thank you so much, Charlie. Also, really quick, we don't have time to bring on Dr. Effie Chow. I received a call from her in San Francisco a few days ago. I wanted to mention this on the air. She's having a wonderful international Qigong conference. The first one's in Montreal at the end of September, September 24th and 25th at the Holiday Inn in Montreal. And the second one will be in Boston, Massachusetts, on October, I believe it's the 25th and 26th at the end of October. So, and if you are interested, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, and I'll put you in touch with her and send you some more information on that. Now we can, I wanted to mention that. I promised Effie I'd mention it on the air. But go ahead, Jerry, tell us about, you were going to mention the anti-gravity.
I've become interested just not only in water, but my interests are diverse, and one of them is gravitation. And so people understand gravitation in terms of mass. So one mass attracts another mass, and if the masses are bigger, the gravitational force is bigger. So everybody knows that mass is really what counts. But if you ask a scientist, a physicist, well, gee, you know, why do masses attract? And often you get a blank stare. You know, well, what do you mean why? They just do. And so for me, this is kind of unsatisfying. And also, physicists know that there are some anomalies in ordinary gravitation. In other words, anomalies are experimental observations that don't fit the theory. So we kind of give them a name. We call them anomalies, and so they don't have to bother us too much, the fact that these observations don't fit. So what they really mean is you better revise the theory or come up with another theory that does explain these anomalies. And so gravitation has interested me, and I've been working on that, and I will be discussing it in the next book that will be coming out, not sure when yet, because it's still in the process of being edited. But one thing, there are some ways of defeating gravity, and we have a device in our, it's not unique for us, but it's just that apparently can defeat gravity. It's so simple. It's a framework like a barrel, for example, a very lightweight material, and you put two wires running around the periphery, vertically, two loops, you might say, in the horizontal plane, vertically separated from one another, these two like rings. And what you do is you put a potential difference between them, like 10,000 volts, and the thing rises up. So there's no motor, no engine, nothing. It just rises up, and you turn it off, and it plunks right down. So there are ways. And this is not an original invention of any sort, but we have one in the lab, and it works just fine. Nobody really understands how it works. It's it's dismissed as some kind of effect, the Biefield-Brown effect, and even that is not so well defined. But anyway, that's background. So I have a great interest in gravitation and anti-gravitation. I went to a meeting in Sicily, and while a few people are bumbling around getting ready for their presentation, I had a chat with a guy who was sitting next to me, and this guy is an Austrian, a very sober kind of guy, but open-minded, and we started talking about anti-gravitation, and he told me about an experience that he had as a kid, and which I asked him to repeat, please, which he did. He explains to me. So he's sitting in a chair, and this is a pretty hefty guy. You know, if he's well over 200 pounds, I think, and maybe more than that. And he has four of his friends. This is the time that they were teenagers. He's recounting the story, and the four teenage friends are standing around his chair, and they try to lift him out of the chair, and they can't do it because he's too heavy. However, they can do it if they do something first, and what they do is they stick out their hands, and they put their hands over his head in a kind of stack. So you've got four people, eight hands stacked above his head, maybe an inch or two apart from one another, and they hold it there for, say, a minute or so. And then they try again to lift him. And lifting him, they take two fingers, and they put two of them put the two fingers underneath his armpits and the other two under his knees, and they lift him up as though he was a feather. He said he remembers when he was a kid and doing that, it was so easy to do it. It was like he suddenly lost mass because it was so easy for him to lift. Well, of course, I was astonished by this because I thought maybe there's some maneuver that they do to his body which reduces the effective gravitational mass. And I'm interested in the subject. I said to him, please, can you try the experiment again and see if it's repeatable? It took 3 months. He sent it back to me, and he showed videos of this thing being done, not just to him, but they rotated so that each one of the other four people was the one sitting in the chair, and it worked. Mm-hmm. He said it worked not every time, but almost every time. So, of course, we wanted to repeat the experiment, sure. And we set up something in my lab, and since I have a bad back, I didn't want to do any lifting, so I was the person sitting in the chair, and the rest of the people were people like students who work in my laboratory. We did the same thing, and another person in the lab was taking the video. They couldn't lift me at first. They did the hand business stacked over my head, and they could lift me so easily after that, The person who was taking the video, you could hear her voice on the video. She's saying, wow, because it was so astonishing.
It's amazing.
So I since have looked on the internet, and apparently a lot of people know about this, and there are a couple of variants. One variant is someone who's lying on a bed or on a flat table, and there's some sort of incantations that people do, and a person who was unliftable before can be lifted with a couple of fingers.
That's
and
amazing.
It's called light, stiff as a board, light as a feather. And I know some people who did it as kids, and it's all over the internet. So the question is, what's going on?
Sure.
And this is really what intrigued me. And unfortunately, the result turned out to be maybe less interesting in a certain way than I thought. See, I thought, well, it's very simple, because if I'm sitting in the chair and someone's got their hands stacked above my head, and I become easy to lift, I must weigh less. So we put a scale underneath me during the process of stacking the hands above my head. Didn't budge. First, we thought, maybe there's something wrong with the scale. We got another scale.
Right.
It didn't budge.
Wow.
And finally, we did the control experiment, which is to go through the same maneuver and have a second person sitting on the other side of the room in the chair, and after they stack their hands above my head, try to lift him. And they could. They could easily lift him after they put their hands over my head.
That's amazing.
Well,
that's...
yeah. So what it seems to mean is that nothing maybe to do with anti-gravity, which is which is the disappointing part, but somehow it looks like people get stronger after they go through this maneuver.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, I don't I still don't understand how or why people can get stronger, but probably you have some theories on this, Ted.
Well, I'll tell you something. There is a gentleman we've got on the line. His name's Leon McNaughton, and he's with the Clean Water Foundation. And I'm going to tell him briefly about that now. Eric, we can bring him on, and I'll introduce him to Professor Pollack. Leon, are you there? Hello, Leon, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, hi, Leon. I'm sorry we're running a little late, but we have a wonderful gentleman on the line named Professor Jerry Pollack at the University of Washington. And he was just describing an experiment where people are able to lift very heavy objects with just a few fingers. And myself, Jerry, you asked me, how is it done? Let me meditate on that, and I'll see what my spirit friends on the other side say about that.
Okay, I'm afraid I need to sign off.
Okay.
I'd like to hear what your guest has to say, but I need to. It's really been fun, Ted. Thank you very much for all, and have a great weekend.
Okay, thank you so much, Jerry, for coming on. Thanks so much for coming on.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much. We have on the line Leon McNaughton, who's with the Clean Water Foundation of Washington. And Leon, and also, too, last but not least, is Martha Childress, who's been patiently sitting there for the past 6 hours, waiting to be recognized. Anyway, Martha's a wonderful lady. And then, of course, we have Michiko Hayashi, of course, from the Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo. Michiko, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here. Thank you. Well, actually, hi, Martha. How are you?
Just fine. Did you levitate when you were little? I used to do that.
Yes, I used to.
We practically dropped each other.
So many people have. Yeah. Well, so many people have done that in Japan, and I have done it several times before, and it's really amazing. I don't know how it works, but it was interesting to know that Dr. Pollack is interested to discover why that happens.
That's going now. That's amazing. That's amazing.
Go for it.
I know. Whenever it worked, it was like, oh my God. And then we'd pull our hands and they'd just go boom.
Yeah. Well, the reason I have invited Leon on today and Martha and Michiko is that they do wonderful things to make sure the Hopi Indians have clean water, and they've just started sending water filters to them this week. And Leon, if you could say a few words about that, and Martha and Michiko, and also Michiko, about your work in Guadalajara, Mexico, too, with the children there.
Mm-hmm.
You're really good.
Mexico,
Leon, go ahead.
Great.
Yes, we will be doing a project with Dr. Emoto. We've already done a project, we're doing a project now in Arizona. But we're going to be doing a project with them in Mexico, where we'll be going into some schools over there together with Dr. Emoto, bringing clean water to the children and their families in Mexico.
Oh, that's wonderful. A little bit of background.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, the reason why we're doing this is I just discovered that there's the biggest natural lake called Lake Chapala in Guadalajara Mexico, and that's they have the highest rate of kidney disease there because of the polluted water in the lake coming from five different rivers, and those in the place called Agua Caliente in this Guadalajara is the world epicenter of kidney disease. And the problem is that the children of 1 year old to 14 year old, the 80% of these children are affected, even hospitals. So we do have to bring clean water, safe water. So that's why I asked Leon to work with us in Mexico.
Yeah, and Leon, it all started in Mexico for you, didn't it?
That's right. Yeah.
The first when we first started doing clean water projects started in Mexico, where I was talking to a lady that was in Mexico, and she had told me about a gathering that she had, and a tourist was at the gathering, and he asked to use the restroom, and when he used her bathroom, he noticed it was water in the bathtub, and he thought he was doing her a favor, and he drained it, came out and told her, and she started crying, saying that was her water for the month. And I was wondering if you can come up with any solar or any type of system that was mobile that was affordable to the people. And that's how we ended up starting out with our solar water unit, because they were paying so much water from the water trucks. And then they were having the barrels. They were trying to catch rain with the rain barrels. And, yep, that's the whole deal started in Mexico,
and now
we're in over 30 different countries.
Yep.
And we're going back to Mexico. That's really great. I'm really excited about this project.
Well, that's wonderful, Leon. And I know that we actually one of the things that it was really interesting, because I had you on, I think, toward the first of the year, early this year, about your Clean Water Foundation, and I think Martha might have been on the show, and Michiko as well. And you had started talking about, like, what you were doing in Africa. And then I asked, well, what about the Native Americans here in this country, especially the Hopi? Because they drink arsenic-flavored water. A lot of them are getting cancer and dying. And so you stepped up the plate and said, well, we'll do something about that. So the first water units are being shipped out this week. Are they already
there?
They
already have, I think 6. And then 20
Great.
More are coming. Is that correct, Leon? Is that about where we are now?
Yes. It's about 6 units right now that's there, and 3 more is coming, so 9 total that will be going into homes over there. And then we got a donation for another 5, so it's actually going to be about 14 units going there,
yeah,
for 14 different locations.
Yeah, and each unit, tell them how much water it produces, and then someone can do the math.
Yeah, each unit produces 10,000 gallons of water. And before you need to change the filter, and it can be ran 24 hours a day, and it's no electricity, so they're actually no electricity water units, and they last for 30 years, so you don't have to change the filters after 10,000 gallons of water has been used.
Yeah, so that's a really good start. They can start giving them a relief right away, and it's the same type of thing we can start doing in Mexico. And the biggest thing that we've been trying to do is to bring this to people's awareness, so we can, you know, raise the money to get these units, because dollar for dollar, it is the most effective way to bring real change. Mm-hmm. And when over 50% of hospital beds, and especially in Guadalajara, probably 80% from the sounds of
are
of waterborne illness. Yeah, it can change an entire economy, even if people get healthy.
Yeah.
In their future.
Right now, they have arsenic in water, and also the heavy metals, and those children, poor children, are really suffering from that, and we really have to do it. And Clean Water Foundations, that water system, filter system, is really wonderful, because they don't need any electricity. They can take it to any place, hospitals, schools, homes, all the places. So as part of MOTO Peace Project Mexico, we're going to do next March, next year in March, we're going to bring Dr. Pollack to Guadalajara, and we're going to do a big conference there, so that people will learn about water. And then we will do some fundraising event. Also announce EM, Effective Microorganism, so that we can start to clean waters in the rivers and lakes. So from both, preserving the nature and providing the clean water to people. That's what we really have to start doing.
Well, and I'm so glad for your work, Michiko and Michi, in bringing this to the children down there,
and being the connection for the Hopi, because they'd pretty much given up hope, because there was no one that they could trust, because everyone said, we're going to come in and help you, and they wound up manipulating them. So yeah, it was very serendipitous how all of us wound up,
working
connecting
on it. Yeah.
And being able to have the connection with the Hopi. And, you know, not only does the Clean Water Foundation, you know, provide this fresh, clean water, right. having mm-hmm. a dedicated in honor of Dr. Emoto and the power of mm-hmm. water, mm-hmm. and the memory of water and the healing qualities of water.
Sure.
Just the intentions that go along with it and the love and gratitude, you know, can just yep. amplifies everything, you know,
exactly.
a thousandfold.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
one thing I like about you, Leon, you took an idea that you got from traveling in Mexico, and now you've taken this to the world to help people out.
Yeah, 30 different countries. That's wonderful.
Yes, indeedy. Yeah, and like I said, and now we're in 30 different countries, and it's just like you said, Ted, when I was first on your show, and we had that break, and you said, what about the people in the States? And now we're in the Hopi tribe, and we're looking at doing the whole reservation.
Yep.
Then along with going to Mexico to do that entire community, too. So I'm really excited about our 2019 project.
Well, there's been quite a bit of frustration among the Hopi Indians in Arizona, because in 2015, the water was still polluted, and it was full of arsenic. And they asked for help from the federal government, which was refused. And then they sued the federal government, which was turned down, rejected.
They weren't a sovereign nation.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. And
they don't have rights because they're not citizens.
Right,
they
right. You know, and there's an old saying in the Western U.S. From the 19th century. It's an awful saying, but the saying was that the only good Indian is a dead Indian from the 19th century. So that idea, unfortunately, I think is still prevalent among some officials back in Washington, D.C., but we don't need them. We can do it on our own.
We can do it for way cheaper. They came up with it. 20 million, wasn't that the number?
20 million, 20 or 30 million, I forget.
And with Leon's unit, it can be done for
30,000.
And so,
30,000 to save lives, give people clean drinking water.
We'll get together and create the change from the ground up.
Yeah, from the ground up.
Ground
and
water.
It's the same in Mexico, too. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
It doesn't take a whole lot to really, you know, make effective change when the right people are, mm-hmm. you know, connected and they bring it to people's awareness. And if any of you listeners are out there, you have a charity that you're thinking about or want to donate, dollar for dollar, every cent goes
mm-hmm.
to
right.
the unit. Everything
right.
else is pretty much, you know, volunteer, nonprofit. It, you know, every cent goes into the unit, and those units are placed in the hands of somebody that is going to share it, you know,
right.
until everyone has it.
Right, right,
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Well, especially in a country like the United States, where there are, unfortunately, great wealth inequalities now between the haves and the have-nots.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. No, there are. And you know, you see homeless people here on the streets. People that need help don't get it, especially Native Americans, and there's no reason for them not to have clean water.
Well, and they've been holding the sacred wisdom for the entire planet for so long,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
it's such great, great expense, you know, and tragedy that they've had to deal with. So it's really, really, I don't know, for me, one of the best things about this and the most fulfilling things to get involved in this is to feel like there's a sense of, you know, giving back to them, you know, because they've given so much.
Let me use your thought as an intro to my next guest. I was going to call him a little later, and I'd like to bring in Eric, if we could. I know it takes a minute. Okay. Well, that's all right. That's okay. Take your time. It's okay. Anyway, we're going to try to bring in my next guest. It's Clifford Mahuti. He's a Zuni elder from the Native Americans in New Mexico, but anyway, I said I'd call him a little later, but anyway, I think I'm driving my producer crazy today.
Well, it seems like most of the tribes are having trouble with the water, because I had Jeff Eby with the Indigenous Institute on,
uh-huh.
you know, kind of talking about some of the programs and the hope they're bringing to the young. And
right.
and he said almost every one of the tribes that he works with are having trouble with their water. So,
right.
you know, there's a lot of...
Is that because the water is polluted in their area, or...
And up in Canada, too. We're hearing that, too. So, you know, I mean...
Yeah.
It's a very, very, very important thing.
Yeah,
know?
It is a very important thing, yeah.
Well, we probably have to find out the fundamental, the cause of this pollution.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise,
mm-hmm.
you know, yeah. I mean...
But at least
the earth,
filters are
like,
instant relief in the process.
Exactly, yeah.
You know what I like about you, Michi, and you, Martha, and you, Leon. You know what I like about all three of you? You've got a beautiful heart. All three of you have a beautiful
well,
heart,
you.
And you care about
thank
people.
Thank you, Ted.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And you don't want to see them suffer with polluted water, and you don't want to see them get harmed by drinking arsenic carcinogenic water on the Hopi. And you're doing something about it. And
and that gets infused in the water.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Our feeling, yeah, our love, our feeling, our good emotions and wanting to help them, for them to heal, will be in the water where they will be drinking. So I know that that helps.
Oh, absolutely.
Additional helps.
And our gratitude for the wisdom
sure.
that they've held for so long
sure.
that they're, you
mm-hmm.
know, people are just starting to learn about now.
And then
as they receive it, there's love and gratitude there, too. So it's...
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't be getting clean water and then putting prayers on top.
It's
even better because of the fact that here we're
exactly.
delivering the clean water and we're praying on top of the delivery. And mm-hmm. it's just an overall beautiful situation
sure.
when you do it that mm-hmm. way. It's the greatest thing ever. And I like the way we do it. You know, once
with
we do the installation and have our inauguration celebration with our prayers. So it's a beautiful thing to see children and their families finally having clean water. And we're acting ASAP. We're doing it now.
Well,
and it's just like you said, Ted, we talked about it last year, and now we're going into 20 locations.
Right.
And
I'm
going to
open up
doing the whole reservation.
I'm going to open up another door for you now. I'll promise my producer, Eric, I won't change my mind again about who's going to come on. I promise. I'll try to give you a little advance notice. Clifford Mahuti is now on the line. Clifford, can you hear us okay? Hello, Clifford, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Clifford, it's so nice of you to come on my show today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I want to tell you, I'm just finishing up another program, but I wanted to introduce you to all my other friends from this first part of this hour. They work on delivering free water filtration units to the Hopi Indians down in Arizona, so they have clean drinking water. They've had a lot of problems with the people there drinking arsenic flavored and carcinogenic water, and the reason why I wanted to introduce you to them is that if you know of indigenous peoples, Native Americans down where you live who need water filters. I don't want to speak for everybody, but I'd love to help out in providing clean water to you and your friends. So that's why I wanted to bring you on now.
Oh, wow. We would love to do that. That would be awesome, Ted.
Yeah.
Clifford, do you guys have an issue of getting clean water where you live?
Well, presently I'm not on the reservation.
Okay.
I am from Zuni.
Okay.
But what I know about the background of clean water, that's the mission of the United States Public Health Service under Indian Health Service.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're not doing that, I don't know why they're not accepting those for the people that live in the villages.
Right, right. Well, I visited the Hopi last November, actually, and there's quite a problem down there, Clifford, with bad water. There's only one. I think there's two places within the Hopi tribal land where they have clean water, and the one is the hospital, funded by the Indian Health Service, and the second is the visitor center, and the rest of it, especially for like first and second and third Mesa, the villages there are drinking water contaminated with lots of arsenic. And it's a well-known thing. So anyway, we're doing something about it. And I kind of want to open up this door that if you know of anybody down in that area who needs clean water and like some free water filters to there's no charge to them. We'll fundraise and we'll get it down to them. So I just wanted to open up that door. So.
Well, you know, everything has to go through the tribal council, tribal governor, if they call them the chairman,
mm-hmm.
and they're the gatekeepers of all the whole, like other pueblos.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's anything that, even though it's free and to the public of the Hopi land, it still has to go through their gateway, so
sure.
to speak, to distribute them among the pueblo people up there.
Sure.
I don't see why they can't just open it up and say, get your free water filter.
Right. Right. Well, I hadn't planned on this, but it flows in nicely today for me to introduce you. I have Leon McNaughton of the Clean Water Foundation here in Washington State, and he provides the free water filters for people. Leon, if you'd like to say a few words to Clifford.
Yeah, and how we fundraise, Leon, because I think that's a really nice way to tie in, you know, the whole love and gratitude piece of it and the appreciation.
Exactly. And like I said, we would love to get involved. We're already starting out with Tehopi and then the project that we're doing in Mexico. And we have a number of different fundraisers that we do. So we can definitely, on our next fundraiser, we do concerts. We do different dinner fundraising events, theater fundraising. So we have a number of different ways we fundraise, and we would love to, you know, see the situation in your location and probably get some water units there.
Okay. Well, I'll put.
That would be very great. I think that what needs to happen is that you deal directly with the population at large, because it's a free program, as I understand it, and it should be done from your standpoint and with the information passed on directly to the Hopi people in this case.
Great. Good advice, Clifford. Thank you so much. Also on the line is Michiko Hayashi. She used to be the administrative assistant to Dr. Masaru Emoto for over 10 years before he passed away in 2014. Michiko, this is Clifford Mahuti. I'd like to introduce you to each other.
Hello. Hi, Cliff. This
Hello.
Is Michiko.
How are you doing?
Good. Thank you. Well, nice to meet you here. I'm living in Tokyo right now. It'll be wonderful if you have any problem with water, and then Leon from Clean Water Foundation and Martha from Natural Choice Network and me and Emoto Peace Project can help people around the world to provide the clean water system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as long as we know who needs it, we put together mm-hmm. the fundraiser, start adding them up, and we put decals on them and dedicate them in honor of Dr. Emoto and the Emoto Peace Project. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very, you know, it's a really very beautiful thing. So we like to have a lot of good energy away around the way we fundraise it and the way we bring awareness to it. So it's really about bringing awareness to the problem. And it's a great, inexpensive, direct way to start, you know, bringing solutions.
Clifford, that was Martha Childress of the Natural Choice Network.
Hi,
she runs an organic food network. So anyway, I'll follow up after the show today and send you contact information so you guys can be in touch if you like.
Could I ask a question?
Sure.
What time frame are you looking at? Immediately? Or like yesterday?
Oh, in terms of
distributing these units?
We have to raise the money first.
They got to raise the money first.
We're still raising money for Mexico and everything.
Okay.
Yeah, but they've been successful in getting these water units to the Hopi, and the Hopi have been very pleased with it.
Yeah, each time we have a fundraiser, we attract more people. Right,
right.
Leon?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Leon?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we've just been growing. I mean, we've went from 20 to 100 to 300 to 500.
Yep.
So we're growing on our fundraising. Yep. A lot of people, we're getting corporate America involved. You know, also individuals. We got the website, www.cleanwaterfoundation.wa.org, where people can donate, and 100% of the money go to purchase water units, like Martha had said. So we're using every avenue and going to individuals, corporations to join us, and it's really becoming a great success.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well,
and the children is getting clean water, and that's the main thing that, you know, and the machines work. So we're putting in units that actually work and is saving children and their families' lives.
Yes, and the books, Michiko, that are going along with them. Yeah, messages from water.
Yeah. Yeah,
mm-hmm. are going with the units too. So
that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
So they learn about water, the truth of water. and love it, the beautiful energy of love and gratitude, and how our prayers can reach to water, and they when they drink it, and it'll just affect their physical body and environment in a good way.
Clifford, I want to tell you, I want to tell everyone that Clifford's an amazing man. He's a Zuni Indian elder. He's produced documentaries on star people and the inner earth. He's also described the traditions about the sacred land of Lemuria, Mu, and the wisdom and what he calls the wisdom keepers. So he has a lot of information. We've got about 15 minutes left, and then what I'd love to do, Clifford, if you have time, is after this hour ends, I'd like to do a pre-record with you to give you a full hour, which I'll play in the next week or two. So that way you're not going to feel rushed about boiling all of your wisdom down in just a few minutes, if that's okay and you have the time.
Well, I'm over here at the, up in Puyallup, Washington, state of Washington. I'm at a Bigfoot conference, and I'm one of the speakers. But I think that what you folks are doing with the water is excellent. Prior to my doing this thing, when I was still a full-time engineer, I used to be in the water, wastewater system. I was a commissioned corps officer with the United States Public Health Service. So I'm very familiar with all the problems of American Indian water systems. And also the last 15 years of my federal job, I was an environmental justice coordinator for all Indian tribes, so I'm very familiar with what you folks are doing. So, but I would be helpful, if I can be, to disseminate the information and even have maybe a part in it in trying to get that project going through seed, and I can be able to help you with that. Presently, right now, I'm retired. But I have also still have my background in the engineering world on water and wastewater, toxic substances, and the like. So I'm glad that you folks are doing that. And I was quite involved with it for the Indian people for a long time, especially in the water world.
Yeah.
Type of work.
Well, that's a great connection, Leon.
Well, I'm so glad.
Yes, I mean, it couldn't get no better than that. I mean, what a blessing. So, let's
That's
definitely
kind of
get together. Let's definitely get together as soon as possible.
I'll put it all together. Don't worry. I'll make sure it happens, okay?
So there's a Bigfoot conference going on right now, because like in the last 3 days, everywhere I turn, there's either a Bigfoot on someone's T-shirt, or I'm seeing a statue, or I'm seeing it on TV. So they're, they're showing up.
that's amazing. That's amazing. Tell us, Clifford, since you're there at the conference about Bigfoot, tell us a little bit about Bigfoot in 25 words or less, if possible.
Well, Bigfoot in the American Indian world is a spiritual animal. He's also a multidimensional being that has always been with us in the American Indian community for thousands of years, and he also provides us with the medicine side of it, and also he's also the caretaker of the planet, and also the guardian of all the human species. And so what we're doing at this conference is that we're conveying this information off from the Native American standpoint, saying that we are at least telling the public that this is part of our spiritual sacred animal, just like any other physical being here, like the other animals, such as the bears, the lions, and all that we use for medicinal support in the curing process. So he's an invisible being when he wants to be. He's a multidimensional being, but he also has the spirituality for protection of mankind and the earth itself. And so he also has a direct communication with the star people, and so a lot of times when they change the plans, he's also there to other ET. So that's why we're conveying the information here in this meeting.
What a wonderful conference. Great. My goodness. I'm probably about 4 or 5 hours from Seattle here over there, but I'd love to come over. How long will the conference be going on, Clifford?
Well, it's on till what's today, Friday?
Friday, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the main event is tomorrow, and it'll be on till Sunday evening. And tomorrow at noontime, I'm at 1 o'clock is my presentation. Mm-hmm. And it's called the Sasquatch, the Star People, and the Spiritual Connection. Mm-hmm. And this morning I did a workshop by the what is the definition of Sasquatch and what is his role in the balance of nature. So I did about a 2-hour lecture on that subject.
Wow, that's very, very interesting. I'd like to have you on my radio show to talk about
that. That's great. Martha's a radio show host, too.
The lore of that. Absolutely.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah, well, I feel a big connection. In fact, I heard one when I was out in La Push.
Wonderful. Well, as I said, I've got the studio reserved after this, and I'd love to call you back if you like, and we could do a pre-record. What is the Sasquatch message now to humanity? Have they given you messages about how we can make this planet a better place?
Well, that's what we're reviewing right now. They're making more appearances primarily because of the imbalance of nature and also the destruction of their habitat and what might happen if they continue to destroy their habitat in terms of the weather controls, the minerals, the pollution of the water, mm-hmm. the pollution of all the different activities related to the balance of the plant life and the animal life. Mm-hmm. And we also have features on the medicine powers of Bigfoot that we are now being exposed to in terms of the healing practices on the spiritual side.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. Do you communicate with the Sasquatch telepathically, Clifford? How do you contact them?
Well, we have each one of the Indian tribes have their methodology. Mm-hmm. But there are protocols that we go through depending on our respective tribal groups and which orders. Most of the medicine orders are the ones that communicate with them through many different procedures, either by prayer, by song, and, of course, by ritual. Mm-hmm. And Sasquatch is a telepathic animal, so there are protocols in place that have been here for thousands of years, mm-hmm. that there's ways that we may connect with and for physical things. Like food and different offerings, mm-hmm. and in return, they give us their power, so to speak, through their spiritual prophecies, and also through the medicine men, and also through the wisdom keepers of the healing process. And we ask for their guidance and their hand and their power to fix the human. And not only the humans, but also the land. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're going through with a lot of people that already have that training or were born with it, mm-hmm. on the modality. Mm-hmm. So it's an exchange of how all of us can communicate and also using the modalities in the curing processes. Mm-hmm. And tomorrow I will make a presentation on most of that information, how they're connected to other systems, how they're connected to ET, the Sky People, and out here in the southwest of the Katrina people, and other invisible beings, even the ones from the inner earth, like the little people and also other animals. So it's a comprehensive approach to what the Indians have known for thousands of years, and so now we're making this happen so that we at least we can be aware of what's going on and make people aware that yes, there are Bigfoot out here in areas, and we have to control our devastation for them to survive, because we need their power to protect the earth and to keep everything in balance. Mm. So that's basically what we're doing.
Well, that's beautiful. I used to live up in Chihuahua years ago, Clifford, and it was a beautiful area, and I was told back then that there were lots of Sasquatch actually in that area.
Yeah, there were about, last night there must have been, some people were talking about having heard them or made contact. I haven't talked to all of them yet because I've been in lectures all day, so.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight I'll be learning more about their encounter.
I've been in the forest before around the Cascades here in Washington, Clifford, and I could feel the presence of the Sasquatch. And I could see them up in the I could feel their presence. I couldn't see them, but I have felt their presence. And Mitchie, didn't you see a Sasquatch in July?
Yes, I did.
Okay, well, why don't you tell Clifford?
That was the one that I saw was an energetic being.
Okay.
It was not really physical Sasquatch, but I was going toward the forest. He was walking, coming toward my side in the forest, and I could see it in the distance, and I looked at him, and then he disappeared. So that was my experience.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's amazing. There,
yeah. So.
Well, he went into a different dimension.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Yeah, fascinating. What other speakers are going to be there at your conference this weekend, Clifford?
What do you mean? What are they?
What other speakers will you be having there at your conference?
Well, there's several speakers here, but primarily most about their encounters how they've dealt with them in the past and what messages they received on them from them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's pretty well based upon spirituality rather than the other secret conferences where they, there's about nine that's going on right now. The other groups are primarily the hunters on how to kill or capture Bigfoot. So ours is just on the opposite of that. As you well know, there's at least three TV series on Bigfoot and how they go and try to capture them or how to shoot them.
Right.
But we're on that opposite side of that endeavor. So that's what we're talking about all morning. My
Thank
presentation
goodness.
Was on the way that a lot of groups are trying to go as far back as the 1960s. And a lot of that information has been kept, just like anything else, kept undercover for years and years, but now we're exposing a lot of the information to the general public and about where they're at, what we believe is their agenda, and also how to protect the environment so that further encroachment by these so-called big game hunters. Of course, they take care of themselves anyway, but it's just the fact that they have no clue as to why they're
doing.
Part of the whole balance of nature, and also with the sky beings and the internal people of the earth and other animal forms that are within these big mountains and these big forests.
So are they
quite a mix.
So are they kind of like to the land what the whales are to our oceans?
The what?
Are the Sasquatch kind of guardians of the land like the whales
absolutely.
Are of the ocean?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it feels that way to me.
They've always been here for thousands of years, and they're the ones that protect the land and also the other beings because of their size and of their way that they operate. You know, they're most of the time they're invisible, but they also have family units, and they also have their their territory. And so it's part of the kingdom that protects other species, whether they be plants or mineral-type places. So it's a very comprehensive approach to it. It's based upon a lot of that is scientific, but we primarily are concentrating on the psychic.
Wonderful,
process.
Clifford. I'm so sorry, my friend. We've run out of time for this hour, but can I call you back here shortly?
Sure.
Thank you. Wonderful. This was. Thank you so much, Michiko Hayashi of the Moto Peace Project, Martha Childress, Leon McNaughton here in Seattle, and Clifford Mahotny of the Zuni Tribe. I hope everyone has enjoyed this another edition of Out of This World Radio. Purpose of this program is to raise consciousness, and I hope everyone around the world has a wonderful and happy day. Thank you again so much, everyone, for your beautiful support.